Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, September 18th, 2001. In the fireside room this afternoon is Lola Dean. Today's session number is DEL 2001-02, and it's titled Book Discussion of Stones from the River by Ursula Hagee. Let's listen in.
Today we're dealing with the years between 1921 and 1934. And when I sort of plotted this out, I didn't realize how close we were going to Dan's time frames. So we're kind of running right along with the same time frame that we're hearing about at 8:30 each morning. Thank you. So I think our timing is really pretty good. So we not only get the church and sort of the, what would we say, political history from Dan, but then we get sort of a personal kind of exposure through Trudy. So hopefully these things will be, this will make it even more meaningful and more sort of memorable to you as you read. And I know this is a lot of reading, and so hopefully some of you have made some notes or marked up your books like I do, and mine's starting to look really pretty bad. But let's just kind of go ahead and start. Trudy is now at the beginning of this time. She is going to be, what, 14 years old? And it goes through until she is, wait, no, she starts at 18 to 33. Is that correct? No, I'm not figuring it out right.
15.
So we're starting when she's six.
She's six.
16, 15, 19. Yeah, till 19. Because the next session, she's 19 the whole session. So this is her adolescent years. And some very interesting things are going on. Any thoughts on from yesterday before we start on?
Well, some people have asked how you've never seen from Vincent. Never.
Jot things down as you think of them. If you're like me, if you don't jot it down and try and remember where you put the piece of paper, you're in trouble. Okay, well then let's go ahead and start today. Remember I finished the end of the day yesterday with the quote that's stated in the very first part of this 100 pages, that the Catholic Church taught that Jesus killed the Jews. But the Jews in Bergdorf were a different kind of Jew. And I think that that's the same kind of statement that we find in lots of different situations. You know, as a entity, it's one thing, but when you know them, it's another. And how many remember last night in the film on the relocation of the Japanese, the paratrooper, what did he say? Do you remember that?
That the Japanese he fought against and killed were different than the ones he grew up with on the island.
On Bainbridge Island, yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So if you know someone who is supposedly the enemy and you know them as a friend, that's a very different thing than if they're part of a large group. So, very timely for today's world. So, after World War I, unemployment in Germany was a very, very big problem. And on page 124, we get a very good idea of that. We turn to 124. Okay, at the bottom of the page, after school. Yes, I don't know your names well enough yet. I really am bad this year. One of you across there, why don't you read that paragraph? After school.
After school, she hid behind the gym until all the children were gone. From the something came the smell of stale water, and a goat bleated in the direction of the bicycle shop. She reached into her pocket and counted the money her father had given her to buy a loaf of bread on the way home. 15 banknotes, one for each million mark. The bills used to be for 1,000 mark each, but the Reichsbank had printed the new amount diagonally across the original. She could still remember when bread used to cost a few pennies. But each day, things were getting more expensive. In just a month, a pound of chicken had gone from 6 million to 10 million mark. To ride the streetcar, she had to pay 7 million mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I told the class about my high school experience. The girl that was in class with me, did I tell you about that? Well, in German class in high school in 1936.
Come on, I count on my historian up here. Excuse me.
Oh, I just don't talk well, right?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Just for a moment. And she told how growing up in Germany during these years, she didn't get any milk. Here she was, a growing girl. Not enough food. She got as skinny as a rail. And at the time, I didn't know anything about this story. And later, somebody told me a mark used to be worth about a dollar or two, didn't it? And here are 15 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's another quote that I have here, too, that in addition to the unemployment and the very, very difficult economic situation that existed, there's a quote on page 112 that I wanted to bring up this morning when Dan was talking about the feelings in Germany at that time. And it's the first real paragraph down on the page. Politics were like history, only they were happening now, but they were linked to history. Her father had told her about the feudal system in which people used to get land from lords in return for total allegiance, like fighting in battles. We Germans have a history of sacrificing everything for one strong leader, her father had said. It's our fear of chaos. And the German desire for order was very, very strong. And I know my Scandinavian background liked things, you know, just so. Mm-hmm. And from traveling through Sweden, and I know many of you are Swedish, oh, how I love those neat little farms. Mm-hmm. And I'd look at ours, which is just kind of a jumble of blackberries, and think, why doesn't it look like so this love for order that existed, and this is what the Nazi government promised. And we'll get back to that. That will come up over and over in these 100 pages.
When he was giving that presentation this morning to that, when he mentioned that particular section, I remember that section in the book where Trudy said she had gone to hear Hitler speak. Mm-hmm. And she got the idea that it was just like the Catholic Church, that you were supposed to take direction and never ask questions, you know? If you had to go to confession, you know, if you asked the question. Because you had to take what the nun said was verbatim.
That's right. That's right. That's the only reason I have this next page done, too. Oh, okay, this is a little bit later. Then we get back, along with that, along with the price of things, there were a few people who were still very wealthy. And you remember the Abramowitzes were planning a trip to China? They were Jewish, very obviously Jewish in that town. And yet they had a lot of money. He was an attorney, a lawyer, and apparently had done quite well. Maybe his family had had money. The Jewish people probably didn't have land. They had goods instead, so they didn't have the drain of farms or whatever to take away income, as we know can happen. So they had more discretionary funds and could do trips like this, which obviously, I mean, if people go off to China in a town like that at that time in history, in this was what, 1921-22, not that many people made pleasure trips to China. So it would be very exotic and perhaps a little to be envied by people who couldn't do that kind of thing. Okay, then we get into friends a little bit later on here. She's 13 years old now. And what is it we find with her friend Eva? Do you remember Eva Rosen?
Eva was always her at-home friend.
Her at-home friend.
Mm-hmm. And was so afraid of losing friends.
Mm-hmm.
Eva had great medical
advice.
I'm sorry.
She had all those great medical advice that she gave. Right. Like, when you hurt, you pull your earlobe and it will stop. And if you pull hard enough, this will hurt worse than... And then the other one about...
Wasn't there something about putting it on top of your...
Tickling the roof of your mouth with your tongue.
Did you try it when you read that?
Sneezing. Sure. Sneezing all the time because of all those allergies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a birthmark, and
what happened with that?
Betrayed her by telling the other girls about it. It was supposed to have been a secret.
She told truly the facts of life, too, didn't she?
Yeah, I think she tried.
I don't think Trudy believes him yet.
Oh, no, she didn't.
No, not yet. Not yet. But the birthmark factor was one of the... I mean, they became such close friends that Eva shows her the birthmark. And what does Trudy eventually do with that information?
She gossips.
Information is power. And she used it, didn't she? And that caused a rift between the two of them, which was very, very profound.
I wanted to say something about yesterday. I think we alluded almost to the fact that Trudy's mother became mentally a problem after the birth of Trudy, but it wasn't necessarily she had another child.
She did.
Yeah.
Yeah, a stillborn.
In that line, I was going to ask you the question back on page 77. Why did Trudy think Frau Eberhardt's baby would kill her? Just truly her.
Oh, no, she thought the baby was going to destroy the mother, mother.
That's why I say it was going to destroy the mother.
The baby's mother, yeah. She had this premonition.
Her dead brother did that? Didn't her mother?
No, Frau Eberhardt's baby, Helmut.
No, she just passed
that. Oh, whether Trudy's baby brother had done that to her mother?
Exactly.
I don't remember that being...
I didn't get that inference.
No.
It was just a matter of premonition about Helmut.
About Helmut, but as for her own family, I don't remember that being a factor.
She didn't know that for a while, did she?
And she didn't know that he had had a name, remember, until she goes back to the graveyard sometime later and sees that the cross has come up and it has the baby's name, Horst, I believe is what they named him, as well.
But when I mentioned that baby came after her.
Yes.
She thought it was because she'd taken the sugar.
Right. Yeah. That was an interesting little piece, too. Okay.
That's an interesting example of the power that adults had over children in those days. You know, all the funny little tales that they told kids in order to get them to be afraid or to
open it.
And about churchyards and graveyards and... Mm-hmm. They scared them into obedience.
My brother was a pediatrician. He had an old German book for kids called Struwwelpeter. Maybe I never heard of Struwwelpeter.
I know.
Anyway, it had all these stories how if little boys didn't clean under their fingernails, they grow so long they couldn't eat. That kind of thing.
Whoa!
That's the kind of thing.
Well, Grimm's fairy tales go too much. They aren't that way. On page 126, we have the betrayal of that Trudy does on Eva. Who would like to read that? It goes quite a little way, but.
If you tell me.
That afternoon, everyone.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, Mel?
That afternoon, Eva did not come to the Bay Library. And the next morning in school, she wouldn't look at Trudy once. The first person Trudy told about Eva's birthmark was Helga Stam, who'd received the dreadful blue letter from school, warning her that she might have to stay back. Like a red cabbage, Trudy whispered, all over Eva's chest. Even her mother can't do anything about it, and she's a doctor. She took Ermtrud Bowden and Hilda Summer aside and told them how the mark on Eva's chest had started out tinier than the pit of a cherry and how it still kept growing, although the Frau doctor had rubbed every possible medicine on it. You want me to go on?
That probably takes care of the most of it, except that later on she tells all of the the children.
Elaborates on that.
Yeah. She does. And again, you know, Trudy says that several times, that you take words and you let them go around and around until they sort of grow and take on the language of their own. Yes, go ahead.
Didn't Trudy do this in retaliation, though, for her not being picked in the ball game?
Mm-hmm.
And was getting side
she uses it as power.
She,
right.
She doesn't seem to do it unless there's a reason that mm-hmm. she's been hurt herself and she's...
Her people is doing the choosing on one side. Of
and didn't want to choose her.
Uh-huh.
And she was left.
Feel what she's
doing. Okay, so some of her other friends during this time period, Herr Blau does a very nice thing for her. Do you remember what that was? Teaches her to sew. And he was a retired tailor. And with her body, you can imagine how important that was. And she really seems to takes it and runs, doesn't she? Yeah. She learns how to make clothing that fits her stubby little body and makes it attractive. And she learns what things make her look good. And she really works on it. So she must have been quite a little fashion plate about that point in time. So.
Especially after she met Pia, saw how cool she looked.
Yeah, now let's talk about Pia, because Pia's another friend that comes in at this point. Who is Pia? Another dwarf from the circus. Right, and Pia is glamorous. She's got on this beautiful, wasn't it a sequined gown? And she's, isn't she taming animals, as I remember?
She stuck her head in the lion's
mouth. Yeah. And she also had, it's on page 104, I think.
Is that the right spot?
No.
130.
130? 131, yeah. She also had some good advice for Trudy. Can anybody remember any of that?
Well, the part about, you mean about never ever make them come down and speak to you on your own level?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What's the importance of the person who replaced Pia on the circus not acknowledging that she'd ever been there?
Yeah. That was a good question. I didn't figure that out. Did anybody else?
But he put down women in general. He said, well, no woman is good enough to be an animal trainer or something.
Yeah, he did say something like that.
I think he explained to her that the animal circus people sometimes stay a year and move on if they find a better place. And so.
You did wonder what happened to Pia, though, didn't you?
Yeah.
Do you suppose she was disappeared?
Well, she may have been because... Was that not part of what the Germans
yes.
were doing at that
mm-hmm.
time?
Mm-hmm.
Persons with handicaps.
Mm-hmm.
And she was
taken away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They weren't, so we don't know. It's one of those little question marks that continues on.
And didn't she want to, she had this beautiful blonde hair. It was one of her high points for Trudy, but Trudy wanted to dye her hair black like Pia's after.
Yeah. She also told her to love herself.
Mm-hmm.
As she was, but she also told her that she had children, and she had a grown up
mm-hmm.
child.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way she put it? That was a normal sized child, and this happens.
It does, because I know a dwarf in Issaquah who has a son that's just mm-hmm. like him, and I wondered if it was something that they could. It was not inherited.
Well, I don't know how, we'd have to have a geneticist to tell us how mm-hmm. often that comes down, but we have a dwarf on our ferry system that usually does the inner island ferry, and he has a child now, and I don't believe that child is a dwarf. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But he's married an average-sized woman.
Was he the stocky kind?
Yes, he's the same as she is, the achondroplastic.
Now, how tall about do they get? I mean, just in...
It can vary. Do you remember The Wizard of Oz?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Munchkins
mm-hmm.
in The Wizard of Oz? Okay,
what
they were all dwarfs.
Okay.
So they varied a bit, you know, in size. The one that we have on the ferry is probably about this high.
Oh, okay.
So
one thing about Pia that I thought was wonderful, on page 136 she says, no one but you can change how you feel about yourself or about being short. It says, and she wrapped her short arms around herself, rocking steadily. She smiled. And that to me was a very important piece of information. It's so easy to project and blame others and be angry, but it's in here that you have to work.
This might be along the same line. Page 87, Leo says sin essentially to her is human and love divine. He said sin everybody does, you must cultivate kindness. That's what he told Trudy. Page 87, her dad told her that. Leo.
Sins are part of being human.
Yeah. Well, they were talking about the church and guiltiness and sin and all. He says kind of forget that and be kind.
Yeah, most important thing is to be kind.
Yeah, I can't find the exact point right now. But yes, and then I think this to love herself kind of gave her a new understanding. And then the Pia tells her that there's, you know, lots of us in the world, that you are not the only one. Whereas before, you know, here's this poor little girl in this village, and at 13, you feel strange enough anyway. I mean, you know no one's like you.
Was it Frau Simon, or who was it that told her that she'd been to the opera in Dusseldorf and saw the man.
The fine
tuxedo and everything, that he was a dwarf, and that.
Right.
And then whenever she had a chance to go to an event, she looked for him, was sure she'd see him.
And he had a tuxedo and a top hat and a cane, and apparently was really quite elegant.
But maybe there weren't that many around if they were done away with, you know.
Well, as time went on, I'm sure there were a lot less. Then we have Ingrid comes into her life in these 100 pages as well. And do you remember Ingrid?
She had to die before she was 7 because that was the year of choice, so that she would still be pure, you know.
She'd be totally pure.
Yeah, I wouldn't have to go to purgatory or anything.
But since she was around, she decided she wanted to be a missionary. And Trudy always had the feeling that something bad was going on in that house. Do you remember that?
But her father. Her father kept touching her and saying, you should change into a more moderate skirt, even though the skirt she had on, Trudy said, was fine.
Yeah.
But he would grab her in the buttocks or pinch her. And so Trudy thought there was something going on in that home.
And I can't remember. I haven't reviewed again the whole book to find out if that's going to be true or not, but just kind of keep that question in your mind. Ursula Hagee's pretty good about answering most of the questions she raises, so I think we'll find the answer to that later on. But at this point, it's a real factor for her. And we also have another character who comes in these 100 pages, and that's Klaus Malter, dentist.
Yes.
Okay, here comes Galahad riding across the plain. Who wants to describe?
White coat,
instead of a coat of mail.
A whole bit.
He's got on a white coat. Who would like to describe Klaus Malter? And she's 18 now when this happens.
He's a handsome red-headed man. I'm very attractive and very amiable. He was the one that took her and Ingrid out when she got her first kiss.
And there's that kiss is comes back and back and back, doesn't it?
His mother had her doctorate and taught at the university, I think, didn't she? His mother.
And what didn't his mother come to visit early on and make some comments about the kind of wife that Klaus was going to be able to marry? Do you remember? There was some discussion. Some discussion about that. Klaus was really more interested in Ingrid, of course, than he was in Trudy, but Ingrid wouldn't go unless Trudy went too, which was...
Well, Ingrid wouldn't even get close to any man, would she?
No.
She was terrified of sin, and she knew what men were like. Klaus tried to date her once again without Trudy being there, and she refused to go. And Trudy said, "Why did you do that?" Because Trudy would have loved to have gone out with him. And she said, "Well, I wanted the three of us to be together, like we did in the before when we went dancing." Mm-hmm. But I think Trudy felt that she was afraid of men by this time, too, that she was not ever going to marry.
So the trust was not there.
Yes, yes.
That's right. Okay, then we get back to the neighbors. During that earlier period between 13 and 18, Trudy talks a lot about singing. Remember, she gets into the church choir, and apparently she had a beautiful voice.
Nice blonde hair and a wonderful voice.
Yeah, like a little angel in the, can't you see her in the choir? Love? And swimming became very important.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember
it
that?
It sounded like she was teaching herself to swim.
She did.
She
watched the frogs, and she sewed herself a bathing suit.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that brings her to some really bad times, too, a little bit here. I've got down just a little bit later. But, we can talk about that now, because the swimming does bring her to a very tragic event. Does everybody remember that?
Yeah.
The swimming?
At the end of the
barn. Yeah. There were, what, three boys, four boys?
Yeah.
Four boys.
You know, one of the friendships we haven't talked about is the one with George, because she had such a close association with him when they were youngsters, and then, of course, it's all spoiled when he's in on this attack of her.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't as violent toward her as the other boys.
Yeah.
He was ashamed of himself. And
they all were ashamed.
But wasn't brave enough to back
on. And she just really wants revenge for a while.
They were good friends in the beginning because he was different and she was different. Because his mom made him wear those dresses and wear that hair.
Then
she made him change the look. Yeah, she cut his hair.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how she recognizes her love and her hatred for the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And how conflicting those emotions are, but how much she welcomes both of them. She likes that kind of hatred because it's power.
Power.
Love and hate. Mm-hmm. The opposite sides of the same coin.
Right. That was on 127. An example of that, I think.
Oh,
mm-hmm. I have
she
point.
Wouldn't go out.
Yeah.
When she called her to come out, she wouldn't go out.
Mm-hmm. When she exposes Eva. Mm-hmm.
It says Trudy felt the love and hate inside her fusing into something heavy and unyielding.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't all of her friends different when you look at Georg? Until he stopped wearing girls' clothes and cut his hair, he was really different. Nobody would play with him. They'd beat him up. And then Eva is going to be very, very different. She's Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And when that comes into being by 1935, she's going to be really isolate, mm-hmm. and isolate. And even Ingrid is extremely
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like all of her friends of her age are in that category of different.
And why is that?
George's reaction was peer pressure.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And, it's that idea of following a leader, and the leader in that group was Hans
Jürgen.
Yes.
Oh, brother. A child you don't want to have.
Yes.
But all of the children.
Sisters in that too.
All of these children were outcasts, weren't they, in a way? They were all not part of the A team.
But you can understand why Hans turns out the way he did.
Yeah, well. I don't know if I want to give him that much.
Eva was so tall and beautiful, and then it hadn't really had much to do with Trudy. In the open, had she, until they went to that concert out at the concert pianist's
right.
home, and she sat by him and ran her fingers through Trudy's hair and everything, and then after that, everybody shunned her too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I know.
Yeah, if you were shunned, you became a friend of Trudy.
Yeah.
It seems to be the way it went. With the assault, and I tried to read it fairly carefully. I don't think it was a rape. I think it truly was an assault. But it was pretty horrible. And they really were offering, and fortunately the people came to get eggs, and so it
that
interrupted.
Be part of the reason she was so mad is because they were just inquisitive and wanted, and obnoxious, and they didn't even
They didn't even want her as a woman.
They didn't want her in that way, though, and that made her feel even worse.
Yeah, and that, and she said that, and that was stated. She wasn't even wanted as a woman.
And they ruined her new clothes.
And,
yeah.
So in those days, the boys didn't mature as fast as they do now. They say that Brahms, the musician, his voice didn't change till he was 20.
Wow.
And girls often didn't menstruate till they were 18. So maybe these boys weren't in that kind of thing yet.
Well, I think that the girls at that point were, these girls had all become...
The boys probably weren't.
Hard to say, but I don't...
But they were curious.
They were curious. They were going to try whatever they could. So, the Butkorit that had the 9 girls, and then they finally had Hans Jürgen. And Hans Jürgen, remember when Eva, before the assault, Eva and, I'm sorry, it wasn't Eva, it was Trudy and Ingrid go out to the farm. And do you remember Hans Jürgen?
With the cat.
Yeah.
You just really got the feeling that this was not going to turn out well for him the whole way around.
He almost burned the barn down, didn't he?
Yeah, right. Almost burned the barn down.
His father broke his arm.
Yeah, he was beaten, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't a happy thing.
No, it wasn't a happy situation.
And he was kind of a
mean man.
Trudy seemed to have an inner warning that morning that she was swimming in the wrong voice when they came with her. Several times in the comments on
That premonition again. Yeah.
That whole barn thing reminds me of a kid growing up. I never could figure out why the barns were so wonderful. They were painted, they were big and beautiful, and the people lived in this crummy little house, you know, like in poverty, but the cows lived in great luxury, you know, and it was that way on that farm. The poor mother with all those kids, and they lived in this little tiny house, and they lived like they were poverty stricken.
Well, when I visited in Germany, the cow lived on the first floor, and the family lived on the seventh floor, and that's just been 20 years.
Well, it was very practical, because the heat went up from the cattle.
That is no lot what
I was going to say. Yeah. You mean the odor too?
The aroma.
At the very bottom of page 119, when you're talking about the rage and this feeling that was felt, that Trudy felt, Trudy recognized this in herself, this love hate and this anger. It was then that Trudy saw a rage in him that she recognized. A rage that she, too, had felt at times, the rage to destroy, and she shuddered. That's pretty powerful. Pretty powerful. Okay, so the assault happened, and now Trudy is 14. And what is Trudy going to do with her rage?
Oh, she destroys
everything. She's going to get revenge. She's going to get revenge. Yes, and that's where Stones from the River, this is, and you'll find this a couple more times, where this Stones in the River description comes in. What does she do to Hans Jürgen? I've got 155 right now.
Cattles. Gets him in trouble. Doesn't his dad have to come to school, and then he glares at her and threatens her?
He says you aren't fit to love anybody, and so
nobody will ever love
him. Right, because he had his eye on somebody.
But she tattled on him at school too, because then he got beat up again when he went home.
Yes, right. He did.
He had 20 lashes, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. And how about Fritz Hansen? He was the young man who was going to take over his father's bakery. What happened there?
Started telling lies. The story is spreading gossip. People wouldn't.
Yeah, then I forget what he does. A more menial job.
Well, people went on to other bakeries,
right.
And so
yeah, that was it.
Yeah, they didn't. Wouldn't take their trade there. And Paul Weinhart was the one who wanted have the apprenticeship at his cousin's or uncle's or somebody's gold shop, and ended up
hauling potatoes.
Hauling potatoes.
I wonder if people would really believe a child's tale. Apparently they did.
Well, I guess Trudy was pretty good at it.
She was convincing.
By the end of the book, you will be amazed what power she has gathered with this ability. She was something else.
Well, people came to her because they know she would tell, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and because she would, they would tell, then she would tell. So that gave her a ready source of information. In small communities, is that the way things go?
Everybody knows everything about everybody else. And they're all related somehow. You know, it's like
we live in a community of 160 people. 12 of whom are nuns. They know everything about everybody. But they don't tell. They're a little better about it than most. But it's interesting because there's very little that happens on our island that isn't known.
I hate to keep talking. My grandfather said this. God made the country, man made the city, and the devil made the small town.
I'd never heard that before, but that's pretty good. I'm going to remember that one. Oh, dear. Okay, this brings us up to about 1931. And at this point, Hitler is becoming more of a factor. And we have the Hitlerjugend, Hitler Youth, and Helmut becomes a part of that. And then we had on page 144, 145, we have the Juden boycott, which means the boycott of the Jews. Is this the right spot? Whoops, I've got the wrong page. The page is marked down. Sorry about that. No, it's not 145 or 145. That's the assault. Yeah, let's see if we can find that. Oh, when we're talking about the revenge, but what about George? A voice within her persisted. What about George? So the revenge on George doesn't come yet.
No.
And before we go on to the other about the youth movement, as people came to Trudy with their stories, she cherished the mystery of silence just before a secret was revealed. And the bigger the secret, the denser was the silence surrounding it. Timing was extremely important to choose the best moment to tear the silence. If it happened too soon, the silence that nurtured the growth of a secret closed around it like a cocoon. And if she waited too long, most of the secret had already drained away.
She made an art out of this whole.
She really did, didn't she?
Yes. She garnered everybody else's secrets, but never ever told from the barn.
I think there was a fermentation process that took place when she got a little bit of a secret. It would develop in her mind until she developed it into a believable story. Mm-hmm.
It really seems to have been that.
She embellished her storytelling.
And on the bottom of page is 159, she would have done anything to be loved by them, the people that she wanted to be loved. And since she could not have their acceptance, she seized their secrets and bared them as she had bared Eva's birthmark.
Ooh.
That's pretty spooky.
Didn't she also get other people involved in her secrets? She would tell a little bit to someone, and then she'd tell a little bit more to someone else, and then they would share. So she didn't have to keep the whole story.
To let them put it together herself.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the political time is rising. It's at the bottom of 164. I had the wrong number down. Sorry about that. And here we have Helmut. Helmut, the mother destroyer. We'll have to wait a while for that to happen. But at the bottom of the page, okay, who would like to read that?
Well, she'd seen Helmut the week before, the day of the Union boycott, the Jew boycott, when he brought coffee to the SA men who were posted in front of the Jewish stores, threatening customers who wanted to enter. The first time Trudy had come across Helmut in his uniform had been during the Bacha parade, torch parade, that the National Socialization had held last January to celebrate their victory. In the dark, ghosts of flames had pulsed across the strangely pious and enraptured faces of uniformed girls and boys as they marched with their songs amidst a sea of red, white, and black flags swept forward by the current of music. Somebody with German here? Were they Anyway, they sung, "For the flag we want to die." The only other place Trudy had seen that beatific expression on Helmut's face was in church when he'd been about to receive communion.
And this is the thing that we heard, these children, and we'll see more of this as we go along. The children were swept into this movement with a very great enthusiasm. At the bottom of the page, would someone like to read that part, starting with Herr Immers?
Herr Immers will be glad when the next war comes along, Leo said. What are you saying? He squinted at Trudy as if trying to gauge if she was strong enough to hear his answer. People have been whispering more. You know we're heading for a war when that kind of silence begins to happen. The sound level of the town, the entire country, drops to a lower level. Even the rivers, the birds. Maybe you're just losing your hearing. She tried to joke away the apprehension she'd felt the past few months and which her father was confirming with his words. When he didn't answer, she said, "I hope you're wrong." "So do I," he said gravely. "But I worry about the German attraction for the one strong leader, one father figure who makes you obey, who is strong enough to make you obey, who tells you, this is the right thing to do. I worry about the belief that our strength is a military strength." He walked to the first row of shelves and picked up books without looking at them. "Most people seem to think that life has been getting better. Less unemployment, more excitement for our youth. Those groups with their marches, their songs, and bonfires." He didn't have to remind Trudy how monotonous things had been for the youth until the party had come into power. Now there were excursions, vigorous music, and uniforms. The people had been craving order, and many welcomed the Listen because they offered exactly that, order. Their goal sounded easy and promised to restore the pride that had been humiliated by the Versailles Treaty. "Our young people," Leo said, "they're easily swayed by all those speeches. Their souls have been starved for so long that they're seduced by the promises, the instant camaraderie. Someone's constantly there to inspire them, to persuade them." He shook his head. "Little soldiers, the girls too, with their alarming pride in that vulgar flag. I'm so glad you're not part of all of that. Well, they wouldn't want me." He flinched as though she'd cut herself intentionally in front of him. "Besides, it's not for me. Because you know what you're about. You have courage and strength, intelligence. But most of them, they haven't developed stands of their own. That's why they take to the new ways. They'll only hear what they want to absorb. Bonfires." He rubbed his chin. "Bonfires and new highways are not going to solve our problems. And they won't be enough for that fellow Hitler."
I think that's probably a very good description of what we have come to understand was happening. But this is on a very personal level. And I think she's done such a good job, in my mind, of showing us how these things happen. And, you know, things don't always happen in great, you know, banner headline kinds of things. It's so subtle. And I think we see that on page 194 with the Rosens. Starting at the bottom, again, we're doing a lot of reading today, but I think it helps us to to be able to understand this part. Let's see, somebody over on this side would like to read, starting, and when you get tired, because we're going to read quite a bit here, so just go ahead until you get tired, and then...
The Nazi time?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The Nazi time came upon Bergdorf like a thief on sneaky paths. Herr Blau would say that before. To him and many others in town, the men in the dull brown shirts were ridiculous, but surely not dangerous. Who really paid much attention to the frequent speeches that were delivered, always in loud, slow voices, from podiums draped with Hakenkreuz flags? So what if their flags were under cover filter? Of course, quite a few decent people, including Herr Heidenreich, were happy with Hitler. After all, the Führer was ending unemployment and improving the economy. He was helping the youth to find new purpose and direction. Herr Heidenreich saw young people joining in group activities instead of slouching about. The positive change was obvious to him, even in the younger children of his customers, a respect for themselves and their town that hadn't been there before. Frau Weiler saw a fresh enthusiasm in her son, George, and his friends. How much damage could the Nazis really do, she wondered. Like many others, she stilled her misgivings by saying, at least, let's wait and see what happens. Even those parents who felt a sense of danger, like Frau Eberhardt and Herr Stossig, decided to wait. When Emil Hesping warned about the Nazis, people thought he was only sore because quite a few of the young men in his gymnast club had joined the SA club instead, moved by speeches and bigger trophies. Some days, Trudy, father told her, I feel like on a train that's hurling itself towards an unknown destination.
Okay, somebody go ahead and pick it up. Would you like to read?
Oh. It was a comment both he and Trudy would recall years later when the Jewish friends and customers would be taken away. But the day that Leo said it, none of this had begun to happen. The people of Berghof had drawn in gradually, almost imperceptibly. They didn't know the destination. They only saw the beginning. Their days felt livelier. They had work, bowls of food on their table. The Nazis assured them that it was far better to live under their regime. They reminded the people of the unemployment they'd suffered under Hitler, until Hitler had promised to give them everyone work and they'd started building streets. They told the people that had it not been for the Jews and their relentless drive for success, their own positions would be far more stable. They promised that German children would have better chances for advancement without the competition of the Jews. They preached a purification of the race, which would leave the German people stronger and more respected. Jews were described as a political problem. Many went along with Hitler's ideas of reclaiming territories that rightfully belonged to them. Though they would have never voted to kill the Jews, they just felt justified in expressing their resentment against Jews and letting them know their place. They didn't know that they were giving their power away. They didn't know that by the time the Nazi regime would become bloated and monstrous with that power, it would be too dangerous for the people to reclaim that power.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. One of you. Go ahead. One of you.
Well, Frau, I never knew how to say her name, but anyway, was determined not to let herself be poisoned by the force of hate that's thrown in many Jews. It's important to keep forgiving, she told Michael. And they received a typed, undemonstrating letter.
Okay, they receive this letter. And they bring it to Leo Montag, and they read it, and it's unsigned, a typical kind of hate letter. And they find that all the other Jews in town had also received it. And then over on page 197, we start to see this circling down and down and down. I've forgotten your name. Oh, I need to learn your guys' names. Go ahead.
Edith?
Edith, where it says our passports. On page 197.
Our passports. He slumped against the wooden counter, his lips half open so that Trudy could see the edges of his upper teeth. two rows crowded inside his mouth. Mm-hmm. You handed them our passports. Michael, you took them.
They took them.
Impulsively, Trudy reached for Frau Abrahamwood's hand. Her gentle friend, who had traveled all over the world, now could no longer leave the country.
Okay, thank you. That was the first step. It was like has happened over and over and over. Their money was frozen in the banks. They couldn't get their money out. And their passports were taken. What would you have done?
She kind of was in denial for a long time. She said, this will go over. Mm-hmm. He kept saying, give those passports.
We should be polite, and this will go away.
There's an interesting sentence farther down on the page where Frau Abrahamwood had whispered to Trudy, it's important never to lose your dignity. Mm-hmm. To Frau Abrahamwood, it meant a loss of dignity as she rebelled against authority. To Trudy, just rage carried its own dignity. Mm-hmm.
I think as we saw those movies of people going supposedly to the camps, they didn't know the gas chambers were there at that time. And you just wanted to say, stop, stop, don't go. But that, it came so gradually, just like these gentle waves of taking a little more away each time. That brings us to our 200 pages. There were a couple other things that I wanted to comment on. Rainier Bilder, the fat boy, disappeared. That comes back in the next 100 pages, and I think it'll come back a couple more times. On page 168, something almost totally unrelated to our plot, but it's just something that I don't know, maybe she, as a teacher of literature, she tossed it in, but about right after halfway down the page, there are five basic plots. Mm-hmm. Would you read that if you would?
And there are five basic plots in these books. She counted them off on her fingers, delighted when she got her father to laugh aloud, although she still felt chilled by their talk. One, true love overcomes all obstacles and becomes eternal love. Two, cowboys and Indians smoke peace pipes together after they fought over territories. Three, beautiful nurses and brilliant doctors save incurable patients and then get married. Four, war heroes conquer their enemies in spectacular battles. And five, villains are always punished.
I just thought that was just kind of a wonderful...
That cowboy and Indian is really interesting. My grandfather came from Switzerland in the 1890s, and he read a book a day, and it was always a Western. Mm-hmm. And he apparently had started reading these when he was in Switzerland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
so
yeah.
Apparently this concept of the cowboy Western and our Western frontier was really intriguing to them.
Well, actually, people from the Germanic countries are still quite fascinated with the mm-hmm. Southwest. If you travel down there, you find that many more Germans than French, you know, and sometimes in the springtime, there are more Germans than there are Americans.
We have a friend whose cousin in Copenhagen is a Native American Indian scholar in Copenhagen. And I couldn't believe it. She came to visit me at the reservation where I worked so she could kind of see, you know, what was happening. But she had spent, I think 6 months it was, with one of the Southwestern tribes, and that was her tribe that she studied. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I said, what? But there's another part about the books, two pages over again on 171. And again, this is another bit of that water coming and taking more away. Why don't you read that, Naomi, if you would, that spring?
That spring of 1933, more than 200 authors were pronounced decadent, traitorous, Marxist, or corrupt. All over Germany, people were ordered, Reinst ihr Bücherei, clean your libraries, and incited to hunt down books by banned authors like Bertolt Brecht, Sigmund Freud, Ernst Kuhn, Stefan Zweig, Franz Werfel, Lion Furtwanger, Heinrich Mann, and every writer on the black list. As bookstores, libraries, and private homes were raided, you risked arrest if you didn't relinquish these books. In school, children were encouraged to turn their parents in for owning forbidden literature.
Thank you.
You know, this morning when he was talking about, he said that it was such a shock to him to find out that it was the professors in the universities, like seminaries and everything, who were pro-Nazi. But in this, it's like the teacher, you know, the professors, the doctors, and things at the universities are the ones that get hauled away from camps or put in prison or tortured or.
There's probably a list of both.
Yeah, if they didn't obey.
Anyone who's smarter than the leaders should be eliminated, otherwise they wouldn't be as qualified.
You know, you can go back to World War I, though, and if you go back to the novel All Quiet on the Western Front, remember it was the school teacher who was encouraging all the boys to immediately enlist, and if they didn't, he questioned their manhood and their patriotism.
Historian, can you review the Versailles Treaty briefly?
Yes. Really briefly.
You're asking
Well, the important thing about the Versailles Treaty is that Germany had to take the responsibility for starting the war. There was no role for Great Britain in starting it, or the Russians for starting it, or the Austrians, who really did start it. Germany had to accept full responsibility, and they even had to sign that on the dotted line. We started the First World War, and we've committed these horrendous crimes. The second thing was that they had to pay the reparations bill. They were going to, what they did was they tried to estimate the cost of the entire war for every horse that was killed of the Allied forces, every shell that was expended, all the men that were killed and their potential earnings into the future. And then the Germans were supposed to pay this horrendous bill, which they never did do. They kept working on the reparations bill, and there were several versions of it, and the Germans paid very little or nothing of the reparations bill. But anyway, it was an insult to them. They felt this was dishonor. They lost their territories. They lost their territories in Africa and the Pacific, and they lost Alsace-Lorraine. They lost Danzig. They had to push their frontiers back.
I think they lost a little of Denmark, too.
And yes, the Schleswig-Holstein, they lost that particular territory. They, let's see, what else did they lose? There's something else. They could not have an armed force.
Yeah.
The Rhineland was to be neutralized, and they were never to occupy the Rhineland. And of course, that's what Hitler did on a real gamble. And if the French would have moved into the Rhineland to resist him when he did it in the late 30s, the German generals claimed, of course they claimed this after the war, that they would have overthrown him. The other thing was that they had to allow the French to move into the Ruhr and to take over the coal deposits to help pay the reparations bill. And in that sense, I guess part of the reparations was paid because that coal went back to France. And there were many, many other things also. The boundary readjustment led to problems in like Czechoslovakia, where you had the Sudeten Germans living in Czechoslovakia, and you remember that crisis that came up in the 1938 period.
What did they do about Norway? They had oppressed Norway so terribly.
As far as the Treaty of Versailles, I don't recall anything mentioning
Norway. They pulled out, of course, but there for a while.
They came back.
Well, the Germans were in Norway in World War II.
Oh, yes.
Two.
Well, it was two.
A good book written by a saddle woman who had lived her first 13 years in. I lived it for 13 years in Germany and was there at the time, and I mean in Norway. And
was that World War One or Two though? Was that World War One or Two?
That was Two.
Two. Yes. Okay. Well, see, they came back then later.
Yeah.
We'll get to that too.
Yeah. But that's about it.
That's
enough.
That's
just a synopsis.
Yeah.
But.
That wasn't so
brief. I asked the right person.
Yes, you did. That was helpful.
That's what I said, is why
my... Will you go like this in the back of the room? Like far in the... Okay. There was one premonition that came out in this 100 pages that was just a very brief point. She heard music that sounded like the crying of infants and the staccato of boots.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Remember that part? Okay, tomorrow, 1934 to 1942, which is pages 201 to 319. Do what you can. Maybe we should assign 20 pages to everybody and then everybody can report on their 20 pages. But overview as much as you can and we'll fill back in. It's going to take Trudy from the ages of 19 to the age of 27. So this is really her young womanhood. And I know it's a lot of reading, but we want to be done by Friday, so that will take us through.
In these 100 pages, she spent a lot of time talking, too, about Trudy's disgust with this assistant priest.
Yes.
Who came in who talked about obedience to the father.
Right. Yeah, we'll get into a lot more of the politics in this next 100 pages. So.